Well, good day and welcome to the show. I'm Maggie Linton. Just a quick reminder about yesterday's request. With so much turmoil in the world, it's time once again to pray for peace, love, and understanding. So every day through Labor Day and maybe even beyond, let's all pray for peace, love, and understanding in our lives and around the world. Ask others to join in our quest for a better world. It's something I do every day. Later in the show, we'll talk with award-winning teacher and author Rafe Esquith about his new book, Real Talk for Real Teachers. But we begin the day with information about gender reassignment. Chris Edwards was a copywriter and creative director at a high-profile Boston ad agency while going through transition. He's now a blogger for the Huffington Post and is working on his memoir, Balls. It takes some to get some. Welcome, Chris.
Hi, Maggie. Thanks for having me.
Well, it is a pleasure to have you on. I met Chris at the National Publicity Summit.
Yep.
And when you handed me the sheet and you said, look at me, and I went, okay, let's talk about. And you said, and I did all this while I was working for my dad. And
that's
I thought,
right.
Okay, I got to have this guy on. So, Chris, let's go ahead and talk about your career, because it's really been exciting as the creative copywriter and creative director.
Yeah, well, it started out, I just left to write my memoir, but my career at Arnold Advertising, which is where I worked, that was owned and run by my father, I was there nearly 20 years. And I was there about 2 years before I transitioned. And I hadn't planned on doing it at the agency initially. I thought, oh my God, I've got to
be crazy.
Yeah, I couldn't.
Let
do
me just
it.
Say
I
it could, for you.
I mean, can you imagine now walking into the men's room with everybody? You know, after all this time.
But yeah.
I had a great therapist advising me, and she's like, you know, I had planned to move away, and she's like, you're going to need all the support you can get. And I had already told my family and my close friends, and people were supportive, so I talked to my dad, and he's like, listen, if that's what you want to do, I'll support that. And, you know, I want whatever's going to make it easiest for you.
And, you know, that was so important, having friends and family who were there to be supportive,
it's
because
critical.
So often it's not that case.
It is extremely critical. And, you know, the statistics are staggering when you look at them. The suicide attempt rate in the transgender population is 41%, and it's 1.6% in the general population.
Yeah. Go ahead.
So that support is critical, especially with teens. Their attempt rate is 50%. So without that support, I think, you know, that is what is causing these rates to go up, and having that is critical, and I was lucky enough to have that in every realm.
I think the other very important point that you pointed out, though, is you had a great therapist.
I did.
Because it is something that you need to talk about, and not with necessarily with others, but also within yourself.
Yep. You know, it was really hard to find one. When I went through this, transgender wasn't even a word yet. So
yeah, it's coming to Scrabble.
Yeah, you know, it is really.
They're adding 5,000 new words, and I'm sure that's one of them.
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I was, you know, in the middle of, let's see, The Crying Game, Silence of the Lambs, Ace Ventura, Pet Detective. These are the Jerry Springer Show guests. These are the images about gender reassignment that were out there. And I'm like, you know what? I don't fit into that. And I need to kind of educate everybody while I'm going through this. I'm going to be the first person that they know and possibly the only person that they know. And it was really hard to find a therapist who was experienced in these gender issues. It took me a while, and I finally found one, and she really got me to think about things in a different way and really helped me strategize. A lot of transgender people, when they're going through transition, kind of stumble through it and just sort of, you know, do it as they go. And what made my transition embraced and successful was that I had a well-orchestrated plan and a strategy and mapped it out in advance. And I did have support, as I mentioned before. But working in advertising, I was able to use what I learned about branding and rebranding and marketing. I used the principles of evangelism marketing to help spread the word. And for those who don't know, evangelism marketing was a term in the 90s made popular by Guy Kawasaki, who was at Apple at the time. And it's basically getting other people to advocate for your brand instead of, you know, so instead of, say, Volkswagen just going out and saying, oh, the new Passat is awesome, you know, that's one thing. But when you get people who drive Passats who just love them and talk about them and have their friends jump in and say, here, take it for a spin, you know, they just genuinely support the brand, that's evangelism marketing. And that was my plan for how I was going to transition at work. I had told 12 of my closest friends throughout the agency in all different departments and coached them on how to tell others and really took the time to educate them. And then what I did was I said, okay, I'm announcing this to the executive board on this day. And when I'm done after 5 o'clock on that day, then you just start telling people. Mm-hmm. And by, you know, 11 a.m. the following morning, the whole agency knew, the whole city knew, pretty much. I was getting calls from people that knew me who had left Arnold and gone elsewhere, and they had already heard. I mean, it spread like crazy, as you can imagine, just yeah. Because my dad was high profile, too, on top of it.
Yeah, it spread like wildfire.
Chris. It sure did.
Exactly. Once again, we're talking with Chris Edwards. He's here talking about gender reassignment. And right now, he's also working really hard doing a blog at Huffington Post and working on his new book. It is called Balls, It Takes Some to Get Some. You never really felt comfortable in your other skin, did you?
No, I didn't. My first recollection of feeling uncomfortable was when I was about 3 or 4 years old, and I was I have two sisters, one older, one younger, and my older sister was about 4 or 5, and we were sitting on the floor coloring, and we were at my grandmother's house, and she was coming back and forth with dinner, putting food on the table, and she said, "Come on, girls, dinner's ready." And my sister jumped up and followed her into the dining room, and I just sat there coloring. I honestly didn't think she was talking to me. Mm-hmm. And she came back in, and she said, "Didn't you hear me calling you?" And I said, "No." And she said, I said, "Come on, girls, dinner's ready." And I said, "I'm not a girl." You know, I'm like, "What?" She's like, "Yes, you are." I'm like, "No, I'm not." And she's like, "You are." And at that point, you know, I'm very stubborn. Guess I was since I was
even
that age.
Then, yeah.
But I said, okay, I'm just going to let her think what she wants to think. And in my mind, as a 3 or 4 year old, the only difference between boys and girls was girls had long hair and boys had short hair. So I told my mom I wanted to get my hair cut like daddy's, and she let me. And then when I went to preschool or kindergarten, everyone thought I was a boy. Mm-hmm. So I just went with it. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, it wasn't till I got a little older and realized, okay, there are parts of the anatomy that are different, too, that I don't have. And then, you know, puberty was my downfall. And it was just a very sad, sad, depressing time for me. And I didn't even really understand it. But I just knew I was not going to say anything to anyone. I just was embarrassed. I figured my family would disown me, they would be humiliated, and so I kept it to myself till I was about 23 years old, and I was feeling, you know, like I didn't want to be here anymore, and that's when I finally decided, you know what, I gotta tell somebody, and I gotta do this. And my family was, they were a little surprised. I think they thought that I was going to tell them I was gay. So this went a little further than what
no,
they were
no,
expecting.
Thanks,
but they were cautiously supportive. Mm-hmm. You know, they were worried about me, and nobody knew much about what the surgery involved or what was going on, but it wasn't for females to males, it was not developed yet. And so they were worried, and they were more worried, you know, they're like, "You have so many friends, you know, can't you just keep this inside, you know, and just, you know, you could end up being an out." They were worried I was going to be an outcast, and then it would be even worse. And I had to explain to them, this is my identity. This is not something I can compartmentalize or keep inside. And they understood, and they got behind me, and thank God, and helped me through this. It was a long process. The transition process is a long process. It isn't like in the Super Bowl ads where one day you're this and the next day you're that. Mm-hmm. You know, there's no one surgery that is the magic bullet that takes care of everything and you're automatically the gender you were meant to be. It just doesn't work that way.
How many surgeries did you go through?
Well, I personally went through 28 surgeries.
Oh, my God.
And a lot of people choose not to have surgery at all, mm-hmm. or they'll have some. I wanted the deluxe model, as I like to call it. So I wanted the full Monty, mm-hmm. and I went for it. And it's a long, painful process. It took me 5 years, actually. And it's expensive, and it is, you really have to endure quite a bit of pain and mm-hmm. suffering to get there. But I'm there, and I'm never been happier.
I was going to say, and you look good.
Oh,
so that's all part of it, too.
Yes.
While we're talking, I want to talk about, there are so many, like you said, myths out there
yep.
about being transgender that mm-hmm. I think also needs to be talked about. Because, as you said, you know, everybody thinks, oh, they're just gay, but it's really not. I mean, you definitely, when you walked up to me, I said, oh, a nice looking guy, but you know, I didn't think anything. I the initial look at you with the beard and mm-hmm. great hair, by the
way.
Oh,
thanks.
Mm-hmm. Very good hair, you know. I didn't think anything about it till you started talking to me, and I thought, oh, okay. And being gay was not something that even crossed my mind, because
yeah.
maybe it's because I've known at least one other transgender person in my lifetime, but I think it's really important for you to kind of get rid of the crazy top myths.
Yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, on the topic of what you mentioned, a lot of people think that being transgender is just an extreme form of being gay. You're so gay that you become the other gender. And that could not be further from the truth. So there's a difference. So gender identity and sexual preference are completely unrelated, separate things. You can be transgender and gay. You can be transgender and straight. They're two completely unrelated things. And the way I explain it to people is that sexual preference is who you go to bed with, and gender identity is who you go to bed as. So it's totally different. And when, you know, being gay is just all about sexual preference. You know what your identity is. You know you're male or female or whatever it is you are. You just prefer, you're attracted to men or women. And transgender is, the problem is your identity is what you know who you're attracted to, but your identity is not matching up with your body. Does that make sense?
Yes, totally,
okay.
Totally.
Okay, so that...
Are you listening out there, folks?
Yeah.
Does it make sense to you, too?
So,
go ahead.
So that's a big one. And then the other one I touched on briefly is the surgery that a lot of people will say, oh, did you have the surgery? Are you done? And the myth is that there is no one surgery, and it's different for everybody, and not everybody has surgery. And a lot of people are very sensitive. You don't really go up to someone and ask them that question, oh, did you have surgery, you know, right out of the gate. I'm very open. I tend to overshare. So, and I'm all about educating people, so I do talk about it. A lot of people don't. You know, there was that episode of the Katie Couric show where Carmen Carrera, who's a transgender model, and Laverne Cox were on there, and Katie had asked them each separately if they had had it, and they both would not answer the question, and they said that's an inappropriate question to ask. And they talked about it, and the reason is that gender isn't defined by what's between your legs. It's mm-hmm. what's between your ears. So, you know, it's your brain. So that's why a lot of people are, you know, I wouldn't go up to someone else and ask them what's between their legs. But, you know, I think it's an assumption that people make. So, but for me, I'm comfortable talking about it. And, you know, it just is a matter of who you're talking to.
Yeah, very true. Mm-hmm. Well, once again, we're talking with Chris Edwards, working on his new book. It is Balls, It Takes Some to Get Some. I love the title. And he's also a regular blogger with Huffington Post and previously a copywriter and creative director at a high-profile agency, ad agency in Boston that his dad owned. Let's talk, folks, by the way, if anyone has any questions, you're certainly welcome to call and join the conversation. It is 866-801-8255. Once again, that's 866-801-8255. You talk about sharing the bathroom and going from one to the other, and you mentioned it very briefly when you started talking. Let's talk about that, because there can be some comedic stuff that goes on, can't
you? Oh, my God. I can't even tell you. And, I mentioned that I made my announcement at the executive board just because my father was the CEO, and I wanted it to come from the top down. I didn't want gossip to travel up, and I thought it was important with his position. So when I told them, I spoke from the heart, and I talked for about 15 minutes, and they were cool with it until they heard me say that I would be using the men's room. And then that is when, if I can say this on the air, but mm-hmm. shit got real.
Yeah.
And they're like, wait a minute, what? Because it's a boardroom of white male conservatives,
yeah.
pretty much.
Yeah. And most boardrooms look like.
Yeah. And so they're like, we should send out a memo. And my dad was like, we're not sending out a memo. And I said, listen, I've got people waiting in the wings. The whole agency's going to know by tomorrow morning. But that said, I will wait 2 weeks before I use either bathroom, just to give people time to adjust to this idea. So when I had to go, I left the agency, went around the corner to a cafe that had a unisex bathroom. And for 2 weeks, it was not convenient, I'll tell you that, mm-hmm. but I did it. And then I came back, and when I went in there, and people would stop talking, oh my God, and not say, it was like, I couldn't even hear anyone peeing. Like, they would stop midstream if I came in there.
Yeah.
But people got used to it. But I will tell you that there are major differences. And, I don't know if you want to hear about them on the air, but it is a whole nother level of gross in the men's room, mm-hmm. I got to tell you. It took some getting used to.
Yeah.
But it's funny how that is what everybody goes to. One of my friends at the agency, actually, when word got out, he gave me a bar mitzvah card. And it said, congratulations, today you are a man. And then he put tips in there. And the first tip was, look straight ahead at the urinal. This is what guys do. And, the whole thing. And it's just, mm-hmm. it's crazy how it all comes down to the bathrooms. And that's uh-huh. what you're hearing about in the news. With kids coming out as transgender earlier and earlier, schools are struggling to figure out a plan and how to handle this. And let them use the bathroom of their choice, and people freak out. And really, it's just, we're going in there to do our business just like everyone else. That's all it is. There's no perversion involved, but mm-hmm. people are just fascinated by the bathroom. Now, when I was able to use the urinal finally, because that wasn't for years down the road,
mm-hmm.
the chatter started up again. Oh, my God, I stood next to Chris at the urinal, whatever. And I'm like, hey, I'm not looking at yours. You shouldn't be looking
at mine. Exactly. Exactly. Listen, we've got a call from Daryl in Indiana. Good morning, hey. Daryl. Good morning, Daryl.
Hello, good morning.
Thank you.
Hi, Daryl.
Hi. Yeah. So my question was, and I don't know if you want to get into the background. I'm a straight male. My view on sexuality has changed over the years. I found myself getting a little more conservative, and I think one of it is because a lack of knowledge and being ignorant on the whole situation. But he made a comment. I'm so sorry. I don't know your name. I just kind of turned on the show. But when you said that, so to get the surgery to be the person you were really meant to be, when you were born as a woman, isn't that the person you were meant to be? Do you know what I'm saying? Does that
yeah.
make sense?
Yes. I know what you're saying. Yep.
Go ahead, Chris. His name is Chris Edwards, and go ahead, Chris, and explain that about between the ears.
Yep. So gender is about what's between the ears, I like to say. It's what's in your brain. And brain chemistry, and they're doing research now to try to pinpoint why does this happen to people. And I liken my birth as in a female body as it, to me, it was a birth defect. It was a mistake, just like anyone who might have a birth defect.
Okay.
And that's how transgender people look at it. We're not synced up to our identity that's inside, and that's what it is.
Interesting. And I guess there are real birth defects, so
yep.
I guess that is true. I mean, I'm not an overly religious person, but the whole, you know, God makes no mistakes, but the reality is, quote-unquote, blindness, for instance, that would be somewhat of a birth, quote-unquote, defect. So, okay.
Yeah.
I'm a little bit more educated. Okay.
Thank you for your call, Daryl.
Well, thank you very much. I'm educated now.
Okay.
Thanks,
Daryl. Thank you. Yeah, because a lot of times people just don't know, and they need to know. About the feelings that start at a very young age. And like you said, you hid it for so long. And that's what drives young kids to the suicides and things
mm-hmm.
like that. And you'll find later on parents are going, well, I don't know what caused this. And that could be something that's never even been revealed.
Right. And they're working on that now. They're saying it's exposure to hormones during a certain part of the pregnancy. It could be a number of things. I just read about a study that showed that they looked at female to male transgender brains, and they look like genetically born male brains. So they think it has something to do with brain chemistry and hormone exposure in the womb, but they can't really prove anything just yet. But there's a pediatric endocrinologist, Norman Spack, who is here at Boston Children's, and he's been doing some great work with helping children. There's about, I think, 200 or so patients. They built a gender wing at Children's Hospital here, and what they do now is they're giving kids who are identifying as transgender, they can give them puberty blockers at, you know, starting at around age 10. And what that does is it stops the puberty of the gender that they are from happening, the gender that their body is from happening, until they and their family can get their head wrapped around this and get the right therapists and help and guidance and make sure that, yes, my child is indeed transgender, and, you know, we're going to help them make their body match their gender inside that they affirm. And what it does by blocking the puberty, it really sets them up for a successful transition. So, for instance,
an easier transition,
an easier and more, you know, able to pass and to go through all this and to not have to have surgery. Believe me, I would have rather had puberty blockers and not had boobs in the first place than to have a double mastectomy. So it's really helpful to them. And then once they've affirmed this, they then give them hormones of the gender they're affirming and help their bodies develop in a more natural and gender appropriate way. I could have been taller, for God's sake.
Oh, Chris, you'll be okay. There's somebody out there for you.
All right, keep your eye out.
Exactly. The other thing in general, I think you've been talking about the child and the, you know, hormone assignments and that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But the parental support is truly the best way in keeping those lines of communications open.
Definitely. It's so crucial. And I was so afraid to tell my family, but the times have changed so much, and this topic is everywhere. It's in pop culture. It's out there so much, and it's people are talking about it. So kids now, you know, I encourage them, and I hope parents will be more understanding, but you can talk about it now, and people do know about it. Before, when I did it, it was so scary. I felt alone. I felt I was the only person in the world that felt this way. So it was definitely harder to talk about. But it's times are changing. And you know, I just actually, I told my nieces last weekend. They're 11 and 9, and they had no idea. They call me Uncle Steiny. They had no idea that about my past. And I, with this book coming out, my sister and I talked about it, and they're getting old enough to know, and they know what being gay is, and they know about that, and we decided it was time to tell them. And, you know, it was, I asked a therapist for advice, and she said just keep it really simple, and they'll ask questions if they have any. And I was very anxious about it, but I told them. They looked surprised. They listened. And I said, I'm the same Uncle Steiny I always was. Nothing's different, but I wanted you to know how I was and that I'm very happy now as I am, and I'm the uncle that you know and love. But I didn't want you to find out by reading my book. And they laughed. They didn't have any questions until the next day. They wanted to know if they were in the book. And,
that's
all I've gotten so
Can I
far.
Be famous, please?
I know. That's all I've gotten so far from them. But I assume they will have more questions as they get older. And I think Calla has health class, the big fifth grade health class next year, where I'm sure she'll have more questions. But it's good. And if kids are that accepting that age, you know, if everyone could be that accepting, this would not be such an issue.
That's true. Listen, when's your balls coming out? when's your book coming out? I'm sorry. It's called Balls. It takes some to get some.
I know. I could go another way with that.
I know you
not.
Could. And I could too, but I, you know, there's a certain amount of decorum I'm trying to keep here.
Well, so the progress right now is that I have six editors that at various New York publishing houses that are reading my manuscript now and are interested. I'm hoping to hear by September, and then it should be probably 5 to 9 months by the time I get a deal. It will be out. I have a website out called chrisedwardsballs.com, which you can go on to and sign up for alerts for when the book comes out and for advance excerpts.
Yeah, I was going to say the advance excerpts. You've got a good sense of humor, and it shows. Yeah. It really does.
It's a funny book.
It's
an entertaining book. It's a general story. It focuses around my journey there, but there's a lot of stuff. There's a lot about dating and friends and funny anecdotes, and it's a good story.
Well, listen, many thanks to Huffington Post blogger and writer Chris Edwards. His book, again, is Balls. It Takes Some to Get Some, and it'll be out soon, probably within the next year. Until then, check his websites, as he said, ChrisEdwardsBalls.com, also ChrisEdwardsCreative.com. He also blogs at the Huffington Post, and that's HuffingtonPost.com/Christopher-Edwards. Continued happiness, Chris.
Thanks, Maggie. It was great talking to you.
Good
Thanks
talking with
me.
You, too. Coming up, teachers teaching to teach. Stay tuned. Did you get that? We'll be right back.
Stories that inspire you. You are listening to The Maggie Linton Show on Sirius XM Urban View.